And so to the Infinite Monkey Cage.
Welcome to Series 6 of the Infinite Monkey Cage. For those who have only just joined us, the story so far. Episode 6, The Empiricus Strikes Back.
After a ruthless battle, the Earth has been removed from the centre of the solar system and been replaced by the Sun. After a apocryphal instant on a big tower, it appeared that all objects fall at the same rate in a gravitational field.
Actually, Einstein showed that all objects are simply following geodesics in curved space-time, so really I would argue that they are all in inertial frames.
Yes, fair enough. Meanwhile, people were furious after light was shed on human origins.
Although light behaves in some ways like a particle, in some ways like a wave. Try explaining diffraction, for example, using a particle framework. Actually, you can with Feynman's sum over history's approach to quantum theory.
Yes, the life was more of a metaphor, really, there. At the close of the last episode, something was going on somewhere in Switzerland where there was a tantalising glimpse of a particle that might give us mass.
2.8 sigma isn't a tantalising glimpse. It's a precisely defined confidence level.
Yeah, but tantalising glimpse is a little bit more charming, isn't it? There you go. Oh, I saw a tantalising glimpse of a lady the other day at the bar. Oh, my Constance. Oh, man, your science takes the poetry, doesn't it? Knowing stuff.
This is the Infinite Monkey Cage. I'm Brian Cox, and since I was last on air, I've been filming Wonders of Life for BBC Two, and in doing so, I've discovered that biology is a science.
I'm Robin Ince, and in the last week, I made a trombonist play jazz to earthworms in memory of Charles Darwin. And genuinely true. And they didn't like it. It was very free jazz, overly free for the earthworm.
Yes, the Infinite Monkey Cage Madness, about to reach you on RN. I shall introduce 6 episodes starting on Sunday, the 23rd, next week at 9 a.m. with Brian Cox and friends. So, Brian, what is the Infinite Monkey Cage?
I think it sounds like an odd thing to do. It's really, I think, personality driven. It's the fact that there are a lot of comedians in Britain who have an interest in science. Dara O'Brien, for example, who I co-present programmes with, has a degree in physics from Dublin. Robin Ince, who I co-present Monkey Cage with, is an avid reader of science. If you ask him, what date did Richard Feynman say this, then he'll know, right? So it was the idea was to have a relatively light-hearted but often deep as well discussion about particular scientific issues. So usually it's a panel show. We usually have 2 scientists and 1 comedian guest, and then there's myself and Robin. And we just talk, and actually we record it in front of a live audience, and usually it goes on for about 2 hours, and then the poor editor has to sit there and edit it down to 30 minutes. So what you hear is a snapshot of this rambling, formless discussion around. We did one called, for example, provocatively called Is Cosmology a Science, for example, where we're talking about cosmology and the data. And so that's basically the format.
And how do you respond? Because you're not a stand-up comedian. I mean, your background in music, if anything, yeah, in the public sense. Do you feel obliged to keep saying jokes?
No, it's not my job. And we always tell the scientists this, that the scientist's job, so my job and the scientist's job is to talk about the science. And then Robin's job and the comedian's job is to respond. But actually, you find that often it isn't supposed to be funny. It can be funny, but often you find that the comedian guest will have some interest and will end up interviewing the scientist. So we have no structure in the programme. It's just everybody sits there and talks about whatever they'd like to talk about. And an example, just recently we had Patrick Stewart, Captain Picard from Star Trek, came on to talk about manned space flight. So he wasn't being a comedian, although he was quite funny, actually, because he started talking about his experiences when exploring planets and things. You know, and he was talking to Monica Grady, who's a professor at the Open University, who's been very heavily involved in robotic space exploration. And so he ended up interviewing her, and myself and Robin didn't really do anything. And that's the point.
As we both know, that's the way that real scientists actually talk, because they're not being po-faced and stiff and formal all the time.
Yeah.
Talking in Martian. What they do is joke about their ideas. So it's not, yes, in any way reducing the ideas or the moral impact, dumbing down, in other words.
You've hit on an interesting question, actually, because when you popularise science, as you know, there will be people who say, well, it's too important to be treated in that way. Actually, I think it's the reverse. Science is too important not to be part of popular culture. As Carl Sagan always emphasised, it is absolutely the foundation of our society. We live in scientific societies. So to have a society where science is somehow divorced from the rest of culture. It seems to me to be, well, I mean, Sagan again emphasized, it's almost anti-democratic. It is anti-democratic because you have people who live in democracies whose lives are controlled by scientific decisions. If they know nothing about the science, then there's a democratic deficit and you have problems because society can make decisions that are not based on reason.
And one thinks of the last American election. I mean, science was almost invisible.
Yeah, although Obama did make a very clear statement about climate change in his victory speech, which I thought was very important at the end. But it shows you, and that's because you have a society where there are many people who don't understand that science is not a belief system and it's not a point of view, that the scientists are not an interest group. I mean, they politically maybe they can be when they're lobbying for funding, but essentially science is a process. It's actually the process by which we understand how nature works. So if you want to ask a question about, is it true that putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere heats the climate, there is only one way to find out. It's to get data, build models, and try and understand the data. There is no other way. You can't sit there and say, well, I'd rather it wasn't, because that would be unfortunate, have tax implications. That's contentless. So I think that's the point about, I feel quite strongly that it jostles for position. You know, we work in the media as well as being scientists. And you've got reality TV shows and Dancing with the Stars or whatever. And science has to compete in that arena for attention, particularly amongst children. You've got to inspire them. They're also inspired by pop music and they're inspired by sports. They need to be inspired by science. Sure. So I think that's important.
We talk about public response. I know that there are several groups who've taken science on the road. A member of my family, Ben Goldacre, with Simon
myself,
Singh,
and Robin,
and yourself. And you feel stadia, like, you know, the old days of rock stars, feeling rock stadia. How do you account for the fact that science is so popular in the public area in Britain these days, like that?
There's a widespread acceptance of what I just said, that I think the scientific community now supports this idea that science has to be part of culture. So a lot of scientists will engage. And what we do with Ben and Simon and myself and Robin is we provide, it's almost like a variety show. So these live shows are not just us, they're local scientists come on as well. But you're right, they're 3,500-seater, 4,000-seater auditoriums.
It's incredible.
We actually did Glastonbury and 8,000 people came 8, to a recording 000. Of The Monkey Cage. It's a radio 4 program with 8,000 people. But and Ben said to me, actually, Ben Goldacre, he was actually talking about publication bias in drug trials, right, which is not the sort of rock and roll thing to do. But he got so, the audience and him got so excited that it was almost like Aerosmith or something. It was almost like a rock star going, and you know what? You see, there's a bias here. Only positive trials are published and negative trials are suppressed. And they're like, yeah! You know, so there's an atmosphere. And I think what it is, really, I think, is people respond to ideas. And what we're really doing is giving a snapshot of ideas to the audience. And because we make it move fast, so it's not an hour-long lecture, it's people giving 10-minute slots of snapshots. It can be publication bias, it can be cosmology, it can be whatever. And then there's some comedians there as well, science-based comedy. And so that's what I think people respond to, because it's stimulating. So I'm not surprised. I know that people are interested in science. If I go to a pub now, because I'm on TV in Britain, then I get asked a lot of questions about black holes and cosmology and particle physics, because people are naturally interested. Yeah. So I think it's not surprising, actually.
Brian Cox on The Infinite Monkey Cage on RN from next Sunday week. That's the 23rd of December for 6 weeks at 9 a.m.